This episode of the Memory Palace is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who save with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DiMeo. Baseball, for all its rules and complications, all its storied subtleties and its intimidating, some say interminable, running time, hinges upon two things: perception and expectation. The batter stands in the box and awaits the next pitch. That pitch will typically be thrown somewhere between 70 and 100 miles an hour, will follow one of countless trajectories of radical variance. It may curve, it may flutter erratically, it may come, as they say, straight down the pike. Much of the batter's job is anticipating the next pitch. The pitcher's job is to try to fool the batter by playing with perception and expectation. Batters looking for the curve? Give them the heat. Pitchers learn to adjust their grip on the ball, how they hold it in their glove or against their hip before they pitch. They change their arm angle, the timing of their release, all to trick the batter's eye, to make it harder to spot the ball and adjust to the particularities of its trajectory on its way to the plate. In this task, the left-handed pitcher is advantaged. The vast majority of batters are right-handed, and the natural pitching motion of the left-handed pitcher throwing to the right-handed batter keeps the ball hidden for just a split second longer. And statistics have shown again and again that that split second makes a world of difference, thus making young left-handers more likely to catch the eye of scouts out looking for new prospects, or the eye of a fellow pitcher sitting out on the porch of his rented house, crickets chirping, sun getting low, some late afternoon in 1917. A few years later, Dazzy Vance would pitch in the major leagues for the Brooklyn Dodgers, would eventually be enshrined in baseball's Hall of Fame, but in 1917, when this story starts in earnest after all that pregame up front, he was pitching in the minor leagues. And on his off days, or nights after a game, he would sit out on his porch and watch the children in the neighborhood play ball. And he noticed a scrappy kid with a strong left arm, already at 6 or 7 years old. Her name was Jackie Mitchell. And so it seems that during the year Dazzy Vance threw 122 innings for the Memphis Chicks, he also taught young Jackie Mitchell how to pitch. She was strong for a girl her age. Her parents made sure of it. When Jackie was born premature, their pediatrician recommended sports as a way to counteract gross motor deficiencies. But she was never going to be overpowering, was never going to have that type of dazzling fastball that earned Dazzy Vance his nickname. So he taught her the pitch that paved his way to the Hall of Fame. He called it the drop. Later generations would call it a slider. It would start out straight and hard, and then plummet just as across the plate. And so if she couldn't beat batters with speed, then she could fool them. The next year, Dazzy was off to the major leagues, and Jackie was still in Memphis, but was the only 7-year-old in town with a nasty slider. By the time she was a teenager, she was a distinguished swimmer, a basketball player, and tennis player, and she had some dreams, it seems, of becoming the next Amelia Earhart. But baseball was where her heart lay. And when her parents moved to Chattanooga so her optometrist father could open up his own shop, she started playing for the Chattanooga Engelettes, an all-women's amateur team, regrettably named after its owner, Joe Engel. Engel himself had enjoyed a respectable, if unremarkable, career as a major league pitcher. But he would make his mark in baseball history as the owner of a minor league team, one of a handful of figures who turned ginning up attendance into something of an art form. He packed Engel Stadium, home of his Chattanooga Lookouts, year after year with special promotions, like Elephant Day, when his players would ride onto the field on the backs of pachyderms, and Elephant Hunt Day, in which no actual elephants were harmed, but papier-mâché ones were set up in the outfield for target practice. And one time he traded a slumping shortstop for an actual turkey, which was harmed, and served at the concession stand. His penchant for publicity stunts began in the spring of 1931, with Jackie Mitchell. The New York Yankees had just wrapped up spring training in Florida, and on their way back up to the Bronx for opening day, they stopped off in Tennessee to play a final tune-up exhibition game against Joe Engel's Chattanooga Lookouts. Just before the Yankees arrived, Engel announced the Lookouts' newest signing to great fanfare, a left-handed relief pitcher named Jackie Mitchell, recently of the Chattanooga Engelettes. The Lookouts took the field at 2:30 in the afternoon on April 2nd. Yankees center fielder Earl Combs led off with a double. Then shortstop Broadway Lynn Larry singled up the middle, putting the Yankees on top 1-0. And then the Lookouts manager called time, sent his starter to the showers, and signaled to the bullpen for Jackie Mitchell. The crowd went crazy. The reporters in their fedoras lured to the stadium by the prospect of a girl pitcher facing off against the most successful lineup in baseball history flipped to a fresh page in their notebooks and noted a man's uniform was far too large for this small young woman as she walked to the mound and proceeded to take out a mirror and a powder puff. The crowd loved it. This was a solid bit in 1931. And as she looked in that pocket mirror, dabbed at her nose and her cheeks with some powder, Jackie saw her 17-year-old self, her black bob curls tucked into her cap, taking the mound for the first time as a member of an honest-to-goodness minor league baseball team, likely the first woman to get paid to do so. She put the mirror and the makeup down and looked toward home plate and saw Babe Ruth stepping up to bat. There is almost no danger of me accidentally overstating how big of a deal Babe Ruth was back then. Think of the most famous athlete today, and then whoever popped into your head, just pat them on the head and send them on their way, because they are not Babe Ruth. And Jackie Mitchell struck him out. She had this funky delivery, kind of sidearm windmill thing, and the Babe swung and missed in the first pitch, and then took a couple of pitches that went wide, then swung and missed again, and then took a pitch up in the zone looking for ball three, but the umpire rung him up. The Babe looked back at the ump in apparent outrage, slammed home plate with his bat as though he were splitting a log, and he went off fuming to the dugout. And Jackie Mitchell went on to national fame as the girl who struck out Babe Ruth. Decades later, long after she'd hung up her glove and her cleats, when she was working for her dad, the eye doctor, Jackie Mitchell would still get fan mail. Sometimes there wouldn't even be an address. Someone would have just written, "To the girl who struck out Babe Ruth," and it would find its way to Jackie's mailbox. And she would look back on the years that followed that day and those five pitches. Look back at that brief window when she was able to piece together a living doing what she loved. She couldn't play for the Lookouts. There was a report that the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Kennesaw Mountain Landis, was so perturbed by the news out of Chattanooga that he voided a contract and barred women from the game on some sort of paternalistic moral grounds. But to this day, no one's sure that that really happened. It could be that Engel was trying to cover for his decision to cut her, or maybe it was just a rumor that took hold because it felt true enough. Either way, she was off the team, and either way, Jackie believed it. Engel loaned out her contract to barnstorming teams that were half ball club, half vaudeville troupe, who'd tour the country playing one-off games in small towns against local teams. They'd use her fame to sell tickets. "Come see the girl who fanned the Babe." And that meant she had to pitch every game. Pitchers aren't supposed to pitch every game, even back then when people were less wary of wearing out arms and blowing out elbows. One season she made $1,000 a month, which was great money, really, playing for the House of David, which was half ball club, half religious cult, founded by a self-appointed prophet and fielded from the ranks of his adherents. All long-haired, all bearded, except for Jackie Mitchell. She wasn't required to believe or perform religious rituals. Just pitch, every night. There were more teams, and a few more seasons in a career that ended one afternoon in 1937. As a member of the Hawaiian All-Stars, she wore a grass skirt. She was 23. By the time the war came around and the All-Americans Girl Baseball League started up, the first and only successful women's professional league, she couldn't be coaxed out of retirement. She had settled into her life at the optometrist shop. She liked the work, liked helping people see better. And her fan mail kept coming, and reporters would come knocking now and then, looking for the girl who struck out Babe Ruth. And since her death in 1987, baseball historians and researchers have gone looking for Jackie Mitchell now and again. Some have taken her story on as something of a quest, out seeking an answer to the question that followed Jackie Mitchell most of her life. Did she really strike out Babe Ruth? There is evidence on both sides of the question, but all of it is pretty circumstantial. In 1955, after a career of outlandish promotions, Lookouts owner Joe Engel told the newspaper that the whole thing was a hoax, the first in his string of brilliant ideas. Then there's an article from the UPI that went nationwide a couple of days after the game, in which the reporter asked Ruth point-blank if the fix was in, if he struck out on purpose. Ruth didn't say anything, but responded with, quote, "just a wry grin." And people have seen a lot in that wry grin. But Engel, a man who named a baseball stadium and baseball team after himself, was all about promotion, particularly self-promotion. And later in that article, he goes on to say that Jackie Mitchell was just a pretty face who couldn't, quote, pitch hay to a cow. And that was patently untrue, and likely reveals more about his motives in 1955 than his actions in 1931. And also, listen, Babe Ruth was a showman. Was he the kind of guy who would let a gal pitcher strike him out for entertainment's sake? 100%. But you know who wasn't? The guy who struck out next. Though Jackie Mitchell was forever known as the girl who struck out Babe Ruth, right after she struck out Babe Ruth, she struck out Lou Gehrig, and people forget that. And the Iron Horse, the no-nonsense, statesman-like stoic, wasn't one for shenanigans. Jackie Mitchell said it wasn't a setup. She was a left-handed pitcher with a strange delivery and a slider she'd been working on since she was 6 years old, and they had never faced her before. Baseball comes down to perception and expectation. If you don't know what you're looking at or what you're looking for, you're likely to swing and miss. There will never be a definitive answer, though historians now think the game was most likely on the level. There's a film clip of that famous at-bat. You can find it easily online. And you can see her strange windup, her atypical arm angle. The footage has that flickering silent movie quality where you can't really tell how fast anything's going, so who knows how hard she's pitching. But the ball really moves. Her breaking pitches are legit. But you can't know about the swings, though. And I'm also not sure about that last called strike. Jackie Mitchell had a reel of the same film in her basement, and she would watch it now and then, that five-pitch sequence that would define her life. And she'd show it to people who'd ask if she really struck out Babe Ruth. And to her, it was plain as day. Baseball is a game of perception and expectation. During her career, she would go out every night and people would see what they wanted and find evidence for what they expected. If you thought she was a fraud and you went to see her one night and she pitched poorly, as all pitchers do sometimes, then it proved your point. If she pitched well, it was evidence of further fraud. And if she was your hero, the girl among men, and she pitched well, then of course she would. And if she pitched poorly, then she was just another pitcher. And what could be more heroic than that? This episode of The Memory Palace was written and produced by me, Nate DeMeo. I get engineering assistance from Elizabeth Aubert and research assistance from Eliza McGraw. This show is a proud member of Radiotopia, a collective of independently owned and operated podcasts backed up by PRX, a nonprofit media company in a sea of hedge fund portfolio padding. You can always donate to support the show at radiotopia.fm. From time to time, I like to tell you about other shows in the Radiotopia family. Today, that show is Zigzag, in which Jen and Manoush, two of the smartest folks out there on tech and entrepreneurship, are just kicking off a new season. They are still sharing their stories of their own struggles as newbie entrepreneurs, and they are also investigating how other founders and creators are resisting a winner-takes-all mindset and redefining success for themselves and for the rest of us. Check it and all the other Radiotopia shows out at radiotopia.fm. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at The Memory Palace. I will talk to you guys again. Radiotopia. From PR.